Good morning, and welcome to Spotlight 92. I'm your host, Malvin Massey, and of course, every Thursday we talk to the movers and shakers of the community, the people that are making things happen for your benefit and mine. Our guest today is a speaker, an author, a teacher, and a lady who understands what something that we all go through every day of our lives. The book we're talking about, they're here to talk about, is Snap, Making the Most of First Impressions, Body Language, and Charisma. The author, Patty Wood. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning to you.
And on that, should I call you Miss Wood or Patty or
how do you? Oh, call me Patty.
Okay. Okay. Like I said, I've been reading Snap, so I'm trying to follow the instructions in the book.
That's great. Now, I have a section in the book on proper introductions, just because what should I do? What should I do? And we might avoid introducing ourselves to somebody or introducing other people to each other because we don't know the right way to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, so many things that can be touched on. I'm taking a class on interpersonal communication right now, and there are so many things involved in communicating that we take for granted because we just do it since being a little kid. We just start talking to people, or we meet people and we do things that we've seen them done or whatever. But, the idea, first impressions, body language, charisma. What got you into researching and studying and being an authority on body language?
Well, actually, it's what all my degrees are in. So when I was 19 years old, I took my first body language class at Florida State University and said, oh my gosh, this is what I do. This is my skill set. I was so blessed to find out very early in my life what I wanted to do, what my passion is.
Yeah.
And so I used to teach body language at the university level, and I've been researching it for many, many years. And I became particularly fascinated with first impressions early in my career, and actually something that happened in my parents' personal lives. They told us, my sisters and I, when I was 19, that they had seen each other across a dance floor in Miami Beach, Florida, during World War II, and fallen in love at first sight, and got married 1 week later.
Wow.
So I was so intrigued by that as I studied body language, I was particularly interested in that first impression phenomena. And sure enough, in speaking to my corporate audiences and universities around the country and my federal government clients, people want to know about how they come across to others. They want to know, how can I read somebody and tell whether or not I should be able to trust them or not? How do I greet people? How do I shake hands? Those are the questions I get asked most frequently as a professional speaker and trainer. So I developed the book based on what people are most curious about.
The nervousness of meeting someone. That's the part, that's the major part of it, I believe, that knowing if you're going to do things right, if you're going to make a good impression.
Yes, and so many people have that anxiety around it. I mean, though I sound really extroverted on the radio, when I'm in a social gathering and I don't know anybody, I use the very things I write about in the book to help me feel more comfortable, like standing near the door and greeting people as they come in, even if it's not your party or your business meeting.
Yeah.
Introducing people to each other, standing near the good food. There's small things that have a really big impact on your first impression, making you feel more comfortable.
I do these things. I've been in this business now for 20-something years, and I've had to greet people and speak and things like that. I'm always and go to parties or meetings or greetings, meet and greet things, where a lot of people that I have no clue who they are. And I'm always nervous about these things, but I always kind of overcome it. I don't know how, though. I've never given any thought to how I overcome my fear of being around a lot of people.
Right. And there's nonverbal things that we do with people we already love and care about and know. And we can use some of those consciously to help us feel more comfortable with strangers and help those strangers acclimate and feel more at ease with us right away. I call one of the techniques flash at 15. So when you're 15 feet away, whether you're coming into a business or a party, you bring your eyebrows up and make your eyes actually bigger, which is a natural response when we see somebody we like or when we know somebody and we want to send that message of love. And then we follow that naturally with a smile. So if you can consciously raise up your eyebrows and flash at 15, it makes the person immediately feel more comfortable. Another technique is to start early on greeting. So if you're going to shake hands, put out your hand early, because, again, that sends a message to the primitive brain, the limbic brain of that other person, that stranger. Oh, this is a friendly guy or this is a friendly woman. And I can open up my body windows, the front of the body, the toes, the stomach, the heart window, the throat window, the eyes, the hands. I can welcome that person, messages that they're safe to interact with.
This is in the first chapter, the science behind the snap.
Yes.
The snap impressions.
And there's an entire chapter on greeting behaviors and how to handle handshakes, and there's chapters on eye contact and smiling as well.
I'm going to get back to that one. The story that you opened the book with, Dana, the story of a consultant in Hollywood.
Yes.
I've had that experience, not that same experience, but a similar experience when I was not able to get prepared and I just went on into a situation and it worked out okay. Is the idea of making a first impression part of the idea of making a first impression? Is it just being natural?
Absolutely. And part of that opening story is to let the reader know it's not about being artificial. The most important thing you can do is be present and connect with the other person, be other focused. So many times we're, what do they think of me? Am I doing okay? Do I sound okay? Do I sound stupid? Do I look okay? So we're self-focused instead of connecting, making eye contact, leaning forward, matching and mirroring. Instead of being present, we're worried about ourselves.
Do we learn these body language messages naturally, or is it something that should be taught, or should we take
it's a combination of both nature and nurture, but specifically some of the things like in greeting behavior and turn-taking, who should be talking, all of those cues we learn over a period of years. One of the really fascinating research studies about how we learn body language is ideally we learn it being face-to-face with adults and modeling their behavior, for example, sitting at a family dinner table every night. And you actually need to do that growing up for many, many years to learn how to be comfortable interacting with other people. And that's why we're finding people under 30 that do a lot of technical devices and on the computer or on the TV, they're making quick, shallow decisions that lay down neural pathways to the ego centers of the brain, so it gives them a high, but at the cost of laying down neural pathways to the social centers of the brain, so they have that ability to interact more easily. So it's as if they're not learning the language of body language, and so it's more awkward, so they'd rather send a text than go across the street or to the cubicle next door in the office to talk to the person because it's too scary. They don't know their language well enough.
Yeah, and I noticed that you devoted a whole chapter 6 to this, your techno impression.
Yes, and it's interesting because as I was writing the book, my audiences were most interested and most curious and wanted tips and techniques and even step-by-step tools for how to have more effective emails, how they can come across better in Skype, and how a text can actually send nonverbal communication. So you need to be aware of even simple things like when you're sending a text and how quickly you respond.
Oh, wow. If you just tuned in, by the way, this is Spotlight 92. We are talking to Professor Patty Wood, who is the author of Snap, her newest book. She's author of 7 books, I do believe. Snap is her latest one, released in October. Making the Most of First Impressions, Body Language, and Charisma. And Patty Wood is called the gold standard of body language experts by the Washington Post. And while I was reading your bio, and I felt so honored to be in the company of some of the people that you have advised and people that you've talked to over the years. The idea of teaching people body language, it's obviously very important. It's something that I had not thought about until, like I said, I'm taking this interpersonal communication course from Dr. Hendricks here on campus. And some of the things that we have touched on in the dark side of closed relationships has been about body language and how it works with relationships and how you can detect if a relationship is not going to last by some of the things that you notice people doing.
Absolutely. And there's a section in the book where I talk about credibility, which is one of the four first impression factors, and how to determine whether somebody has integrity and whether you can trust them, and even tools to determine whether somebody might be lying to you or withholding information.
Can you actually tell it? I mean, can you know it for sure?
Well, one of the things I always say is, if your intuition is saying something's not right, that's actually your central nervous system, which acts as a human lie detector, feeling the dissonance, feeling a lack of a match between typically what the person is saying with their words and what they're doing nonverbally, because we can give thousands of cues in less than a minute. So when we're lying, we might be able to control the words with the neocortex, the logical thinking brain, but the liar is not able to control or consciously control those thousands of nonverbal cues. So they're saying, "I like you so much," but there's something that's in that paralanguage, the voice tone, the tempo, and the speaking rate, that's different than, "I like you so much." It doesn't sound the same to our limbic brain. So we doubt the veracity of that message. And we should. When you feel something's not right, gather information, find out from that person, try to build some trust to see what's really going on.
When you meet people, that first impression, the conversation goes better if you trust them or feel like you trust them.
Yes, and that's interesting. That's a interesting research phenomena too, that people that think the best of others actually have a higher probability of determining whether or not somebody's being untruthful. And I call that true north. If you know in your body what it's like to be with somebody that you honor them, you trust them, they have integrity, your central nervous system recognizes what that feels like, which should be both a peaceful calm but energizing as well. And that means that if you're with somebody that's not telling you the truth, it doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel good. So it's interesting that most skeptical people, the people that think everybody's out to get them, are less likely to be able to recognize. They just think, everything's wrong. So they don't know the true north of somebody that's being honest and credible.
And knowing the true north of a person can sort of give you an insight on, well, I guess it can give you an insight on what they think of you.
Absolutely. Because, you know, when you are matching and mirroring, if you're in the presence of somebody that's authentic, their body language is going to be what I call in the book feel, show, say. In other words, they're feeling in a true emotion, like love or liking or enthusiasm, and you're seeing it and you're hearing it in their nonverbal communication, and then they go over to the neocortex to create the words that match it. So when somebody says, "That sounds incredible," you hear the energy of the voice almost before the words come out of the person's mouth, and that feels good.
Very interesting. I mean, that's science. That's not speculation. That's
absolutely. And you know, all my degrees are in body language and nonverbal communication. And I can tell you that for the first 8 years I was in business, I had to spend a good deal of my program, like whether I was doing a speech or a training course for a corporation, justifying it, showing the science to the audience so they saw that this is something worthwhile. Now people, they didn't even know what body language was. Now they go, "Oh my gosh, okay, I want to learn more about that. I want to learn how to apply it to sales or presentations."
That's what I was thinking. You know, they look at you as a snake oil merchant when you first come in talking about body language.
Yes, they did. Now they understand that there's an enormous amount of information that you can have insight to at a conscious level if you're reading even the way somebody holds their palm out to show they're being honest with you rather than shows the back of the hand or hides their hands, which we actually read as something dangerous is going on if you can't see somebody else's hands.
Wow. And then all of these are basic to the human nature, basic to survival instinct.
Yes, and that's why, you know, you've heard of the fight-flight response. The most honest portion of the body is actually the feet, and I discuss this in more detail in the book, because that's the first part of the body that has to flee or freeze in place or fight when you're in danger. So you can even tell whether or not sometimes you're subconsciously sending a message that you don't like somebody and don't want to talk to them. If you look down at your feet and you go, "I'm talking to this person, I'm facing them, I'm making eye contact, but my feet are turned towards the exit."
Interesting. The title of the book, Snap. These things, these impressions and things happen immediately.
Yes, and measured down to a fraction of a second, research to less than 1/300th of a second for an accurate first impression, 80% or higher in accuracy.
Goodness, but now is that, so suppose you do make a wrong impression, a bad impression, can you change a first impression?
It's very difficult because first impressions are part of our basic survival instinct, and I want to differentiate. Stereotypes, totally different thing. Stereotypes, very low in accuracy. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a short blonde, thinking, oh, all short blondes are this way, that's a stereotype.
Yeah.
But accurate first impressions are formed very quickly and difficult to change. You can change them. One of the methods I discuss in the book is seeing a person in a different situation, a different environment, has been shown to have the ability to help you reset your first impression. So, for example, you meet somebody at work, you have this bad relationship because they have a bad first impression of you. Mm-hmm. If you ask them out to lunch or you see them at the softball game on the weekend, they can reset their first impression of you in that setting, and it helps influence how they might treat you at work.
Okay, but first impressions are basically accurate, aren't they?
Yes, yes. As long as we're talking about that visceral limbic brain processing of all the nonverbal cues, highly accurate.
You know, I'm so afraid of permanence, and I hate to mess up and have it in my mind that this is a permanent mess up. I'll never be able to straighten it up.
Isn't it? I mean, it's so stressful to think that and have all that pressure on you. So you can get a second chance, but it does take consistency as well. So I'm going to try just today to change the first impression. It might take a long period of time. In fact, the research says it can take up to 6 months of continuous face-to-face interaction, continually being with a person to change an incorrect, really bad first impression. But you can do it.
Yeah. And considering the fact that, like I said earlier, we use these techniques like all day long, constantly.
Right. Right. Even when you go through the drive through at Wendy's, you're reading that person's voice through the paralanguage through that speaker, and they're making a judgment. Oh, how fast do I need to serve this person? And you're making an assessment. Are they going to serve me quickly? You're making assessments all the time. In fact, if you didn't form first impressions, it would be too scary to leave the house because you'd have to go through this big, scary interaction every time and wile yourself up to fight because you wouldn't know whether people were safe to approach or not safe to approach.
Wow. Well, that can be very – no, so I understand then why you are always you consult with a lot of law enforcement.
Yes, law enforcement officers, judges. I do a lot of work with media, analyzing people that are suspects in murder trials. Also, obviously, politicians. Did a lot of that reading recently.
Yeah, I guess so. That was something that I noticed in the beginning of – I wish we had gotten our interview done like – back in October when we first started trying to get it set, but
right.
But and so the election will be over by the time this interview airs. But in looking at those what were your impressions in looking at those so-called debates?
Well, one of the things that was so striking to me, because I've been analyzing debates and politicians for over 20 years, is how much anger each of them showed at times. And so striking, because that's not something you typically see in these formal televised debates. So that was so striking. And the fact that Romney was coached to do particular things like smile during the first 30 minutes of every debate. And so he came across nonverbally as the happy, smiling, possible candidate. So just interesting, very interesting things.
And you could notice, you could tell that he had been coached.
Yes, and one of the reasons you can tell, and it's another thing that I mentioned in the book in terms of credibility, when a cue lasts too long, a smile actually is a typically a current. It think of it as a wave that comes across the face, and it peaks, and it ebbs and flows. It comes down again. So when you think of a smile being plastered on the face, like that's a fake smile, it's lingering too long, and it doesn't match what the person is saying or doing with the rest of their face or body language. So anytime you think of somebody, that smile doesn't seem real to me. They seem so fake or plastic. It could be because the upper part of the face, which is under less conscious control, is not matching the fake smile in the bottom half of the face.
That's amazing. If you just tuned in once again, by the way, this is Spotlight 92. We are talking with author Patty Wood. She has a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in body language and is a high-energy, interactive, professional speaker, trainer, media expert. She's been on hundreds of TV shows and has been quoted in more than 700 publications. She's authored 7 books on communication. And on her website, which is pattywood.net.
Correct. PattiWood.net. And there's a separate website for the book called snapfirstimpressions.com as well.
Yeah. But, the interaction with Regis and Kelly.
Yes, I did couple sleep positions. And it's interesting for anybody that ever watched Regis and Kelly, Regis Philbin, high, and what I discuss in the book are the charismatic factors, likability, attractiveness, and power. And has laser focus, eye contact, incredibly astute and skilled at making you feel like you're the only person in the room, and also lots of vocal variation. So charismatic people have that ability to absolutely lean forward and mesmerize you. If anybody watched former President Clinton in the Democratic debates or the Democratic convention, he had so much charisma as he spoke. No matter what your political affiliation, you could be swept away by it. And it's interesting, I discuss in the book how charismatic factors can override, somebody's high in charisma, can override our ability to tell whether or not somebody's being honest with us. That doesn't mean all charismatic people are dishonest. It just means that if somebody is highly charismatic, they have great persuasive powers.
Yes. I mean, I watched Mr. Clinton speak, and I thought, if he was running for president, I'd vote for him right now.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. So many people felt that. They were just, what a great speaker. It just showed so much enthusiasm and passion in his voice. Again, no matter what you were thinking politically, he is entrancing.
He made you trust him. He made him trustworthy.
Yes.
And it's something you mentioned just now about Regis Philbin, and we touched on it a little bit, the techno impression.
Mm-hmm.
And you also said something about it as well when you said that people should eat family dinners for the kids. Is our new technological age distancing us from being humans?
It's changing the brain. It's changing the brain. There's, again, I mentioned quite a few different studies in the book about how it's changing the brain. That doesn't mean it's all negative. There's some ability to interact with technology that's absolutely amazing. It just means that it's changing our human interaction. So there's new rituals, things that we should do, even simple things. Yeah. One of the recommendations I make in the book is that if you've got a cell phone, a smartphone, or technology of any other kind when you're with somebody, that you turn it off and you say to the person when you sit down to talk with them, "You're so important. I'm putting all this away," and put it out of your visual field instead of what I see people doing, like they put it in their lap or they put it to their right on the table between themselves and the other person. Mm-hmm. So you're signaling nonverbally, this is really important to me. It's between me and you. And if something happens, I'm going to glance down here and I'm going to take care of that because it's more important than you are. I sometimes call our technology like carrying our 3-year-olds with us wherever we go.
Mm. Yeah, and I know too for a fact that it's become a thing. Everybody walks around with a smartphone or a laptop or something, and
yes,
such as being uncomfortable when you get in the elevator with a lot of people. You only be in there a few seconds, but people try to avoid. They look away from each other.
And it's interesting. I talk about what I call heart windows in the book, and the front of your body has the windows at the toes, the knees, the pelvis, the heart, the throat, the mouth, the eyes, and the palms of the hands. And on an elevator, especially men, they don't like to face towards another man, because that automatically puts them in opposition or battle mode.
Yeah.
And it even increases adrenaline in their body. So everybody faces towards the door, not just because that's the way they get out of the elevator, but because if a man faces as they come on the elevator and stays facing, it makes men go, wait a minute, should I fight this guy? I don't feel uncomfortable here.
Yeah. And do we also use these things as a retreat? With a person, an insecure person, I've noticed that a lot of times people will be looking down at the cell phone or playing with the texting or whatever. It seems like to me they're out of context doing it. And I think, okay, they're doing that because they're nervous. They don't want to be
right. And it does feed the ego centers of the brain. So it gives you a little bit of a high, and typically, according to the research, makes you feel superior to those around you when you're checking your technology. So it makes sense that when we're highly anxious or nervous, that we check it more often. Or, I'm going to the social situation. I don't know what to do. I feel uncomfortable. Let me get a hit from my technical device to make me feel better. And yet it ends up distancing us from other people, because we have that device between us as a block.
And I'm bouncing all around through the chapters, but there's one that I wanted to get to as well. When I was in the Air Force and we were traveling around.
Oh, my dad was in the Air Force.
Oh, good. Well, we were traveling around in Europe. We went to Turkey, went to different places. It was a supply squadron, Air Force supply. But we got instructed at different places on how to greet people and how not to greet people. On what hand to touch a person. In Turkey, you don't touch a person with your left hand.
That's considered unclean.
Yeah, exactly. And we had no clue about that. And one of the chapters in the book about handshakes, meet and greet, handshakes come first. In our Western culture, yes, handshakes. When do you know when to shake somebody's hand? And what messages are you getting from a handshake?
Well, typically, those body windows that I mentioned previously across the front of the body will stay open if somebody wants to shake hands with you, and it's a signal to you to go ahead and reach out your hand. So my recommendation is to always shake hands. If you don't know what to do in terms of greeting, if you don't know, should I hug, should I not hug, at least put out your hand to shake hands. A handshake is equal to 3 hours of continuous face-to-face interaction and its ability to establish rapport. So if you don't shake hands, if you don't put out your hand, it takes longer to feel comfortable around somebody, and they don't have as wonderful a first impression of you either. Mm. So go ahead and shake hands. If you don't know what to do, go ahead and do it.
Okay, and a lot of people fist bump now because of the sanitation situation.
Yes, and that's interesting. That actually started from the TV show Entourage, and then came across when people were using it to even signal each other, hey, victory in the Olympics.
Yeah, well, I know people. Some people don't want to shake hands because they don't want germs and things like
that. They're afraid of germs, and it's interesting. That's affecting our desire and comfort with shaking hands. There's germs all over the place.
Yeah.
But it is keeping people, I call it I predict the possible death of the handshake, which would just be terrible because it has such strength in our ability to get close to people very quickly and feel comfortable. Actually, it's the touch aspect that does that. So if it's cold season and you're going, I'm not going to shake hands, you can take your left hand, if it's not turkey, you can take your left hand and touch or reach out towards the arm of the other person, that left arm of the other person, and touch between the elbow and fingertips to at least get that physical contact. And that actually has some of the same cascading positive benefits as a handshake.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's a good alternative. And I noticed also about the crusher.
Yes. Yeah, when you're going, oh, please, what are you doing? And, you know, when you're getting that bone crusher handshake, your right hand can't do anything, but your left hand is totally free and available. So if you care to, you can take that left hand as you're being crushed in the right and surround the bone crusher handshake that you're being given to send a symbolic message, hey, babe, you're surrounded. Loosen that grip up.
And it works.
It works. And I had so many questions about different kinds of handshakes and how to deal with them that's a big section in the book. And even on the website, I go into more detail.
Well, the book is Snap, Making the Most of First Impressions, Body Language and Charisma. The author, Patty Wood, and she's been our guest on Spotlight 92. Patty, the book was released in October. Is it, are we doing, how's it doing?
It's so doing great. I'm starting to do quite a bit of TV appearances, and it's wonderful. I'm so excited. It's been just a wonderful labor of love.
Well, it sure is a great read, and I like I said, it's helping me out with my class as well. So thank you for that.
Good.
Once again,
yeah, when you get that A, give me a call.
Okay, I will certainly do it. The website is pattywood.net. Pattywood.net for the book. Let's see. The book is okay, Patty. What's the book?
The book is Snap, website. Making the Most of First Impressions, Body Language, and Charisma. You can get it in Barnes & Noble and any of the websites online.
Yeah, the website. That's what I mean. You know,
okay,
you
the book your website is snapfirstimpressions.com.
Snapfirstimpressions.com. Okay, and the website for Patty Wood is Patty, P-A-T-T-I, Wood.net. Snap, Making the Most of First Impressions, Body Language and Charisma. Patty Wood, thank you so much for being our guest, Patty.
It's been an absolute pleasure. What a wonderful person you are.
Thank you. I made a good impression. I am so
thrilled.
All right. And this has been Spotlight 92. We'll do it again next week. In the meantime, you're back for more of the best in jazz. This is U92 FM.